Welcome to the Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now, Friday night. Ailish Forfar, Justin Cuthbert for the next hour as we send you off into a pretty fun weekend ahead. Excited for that.
Yeah, we're in the throes of a major football weekend. Slug mode activated, like, in full by the time we leave the studio tonight. So, yeah, exciting times ahead.
A great slate on Hockey Night in Canada. As you mentioned, a lot of NFL football. We got some college football to wrap up as well. So Donovan Bennett, going deep in the Fan Checkdown, is going to join us in about 10 minutes to go through the NFL slate. Jeff Blair of Blair & Barker is going to join us in about half an hour to go through a little Blue Jays discussion that we were teeing up yesterday. We finally got the confirmation on all of the Blue Jays avoiding arbitration. We're going to play some spicy audio from Brad Marchand, who is calling out a reporter that is reporting a rift between him and Pasternak. And I don't know what it is. It feels weird to say this out loud, but Marchand's like growing on me a little bit this year. He's just kind of just bold. And I like that he's, I like something about his attitude this year. Maybe it's that he's going to be wearing a Canada sweater and I'm trying to accept that.
That might be one thing. Might also be weapons down because the Bruins newsflash aren't very good and feel a little less threatening. So maybe you can enjoy Brad Marchand just a little bit more. But yeah, staunch defense of his friendship with David Pasternak. We can share some theories a little later on.
Okay. Let's start with the Blue Jays though, because yesterday before we got off the air, we were discussing which Blue Jays were and were not settled up with the arbitration discussion, and all Blue Jays were avoided arbitration, including Vladimir Guerrero Jr., which happened just after our show yesterday. So we're going to talk to Jeff Blair about that in about 30 minutes. But Hector Gomez yesterday as well, they always do this after we get off the air. So
Late last night,
mentioning that the Blue Jays plan to make a second contract extension offer to Vlad, which will be very close to what the player is looking for. And just to backtrack a little bit, if you forget what the numbers are, Bob Nightingale saying back 2 days ago that Guerrero and the Blue Jays are at least $100 million apart, with Guerrero seeking at least $450 million. So we're getting closer, apparently.
Yeah, maybe I'm just a dummy, and like, why couldn't you just give him an offer that he wouldn't immediately bristle at
playing
right off
ball.
The bat? Like, who is this tricking? What is this accomplishing? I'm not really sure, again, if it's like at least $450 million, which makes a lot of sense given the money that's been thrown around this offseason and last. Like, could you not just get it done? If you got to 475, 500, give him more than what he expects, or at least give some sort of recognition that, yeah, he is the guy that you want to build around. I'm not sure if slow playing it is going to get it done. In fact, I think playing games with superstars generally is a bad idea. But maybe all they need to do is slowly get to the offer. And we did get an agreement between the two sides yesterday. Maybe there's
That's a good start. It's nice to avoid arbitration because nobody likes that. So they did avoid it with a $28.5 million deal yesterday. But I think even if it's $450 million, $500 million, I think that's cheaper than what he's going to end up getting this offseason if he goes into free agency. So I don't know if the road is rocky or if the road is, you know, swallowing your pride and kind of having to come with the tail between your legs, but it needs to happen. Like that pathway between the Blue Jays and Vlad, and if it's 450, 500, we'll talk to Jeff Blair about what his thoughts are, but I think it seems like it's right there.
Yeah, he'll let us know how simple this is.
We are dumbing it down
at the end of the day, but it does feel like just like not lame, but maybe it will turn out to be somewhat lame in that, you know, Vladdy's evoking sort of the Red Sox thing, and that's like this veiled threat, and the Blue Jays giving an offer that's $100 million off expectation. And I'm sure they understand what the expectations are, so that does feel like it's a low ball thing and kind of a lame offer. I hope we can get past that and they can get to a deal. But again, being this close to the cutoff date, which is, hey, I'm not doing anything after we get to spring training. I mean, we're almost there. So I don't know. I hope they can have some productive talks over the next little while, because this would be a difficult story to chew on for the next 12 months.
Okay, we will recircle the Vlad and Blue Jays discussion around 6:30. Let's shift over to some football. Our text line's open at 590-590. Standard message and data rates apply. Which wild card matchup are you most looking forward to? You can send that in to us and give us your reasons why, because we're going to go through them all with Donovan Bennett in about 5 minutes. But let's answer the question ourselves. Let's look through some of these games that are starting quite soon and going to wrap up Super Wild Card Weekend. weekend.
Actually, apparently they dropped the super, which I'm not really sure why.
I still think it's super.
It is super. Six wildcard games.
Let's keep calling it super. Why would you lose the super?
I'm down with super, but I did learn on X it's no longer officially branded as super. Still super, though, in my book. Okay. I feel like I have to stay consistent in terms of the wildcard matchup I'm looking forward to the most, because I said at the start of the week that only the only team that can win playing this week is the Baltimore Ravens, win being the Super Bowl. Six teams will win this weekend, including the Ravens, hopefully. Although it is the difficult matchup. It is, at least on paper, a difficult matchup because they're playing the Steelers. They have all this familiarity. Mike Tomlin makes life miserable on Lamar Jackson. It is intriguing, although it shouldn't be all that intriguing, because the Steelers have been downright awful for about a month and the Ravens have been at their best over the last month. So it feels like the Ravens should win this in a walk, but it's never easy against the Steelers. So I think I'm most interested in that, despite it probably not being the best game.
I think there's a lot of right answers for this. I think Packers and Eagles is the first. I mean, maybe I'm tied. Obviously, I want to watch my Bills beat up on the Broncos, but I'm going to go to Packers and Eagles. I think obviously injury is a big storyline into this one, both quarterbacks. But I think lately there's been so much hype about the Eagles and if they're the real deal. And I think this week we talked about it multiple times. So I'm interested to see like how much that attention, how much they've kind of shown in the stretch of like 12-1 since the end of September is surreal. But my second would be Commanders and Bucks. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever been excited to watch like the Commanders before this year, but really excited to see what Jaden Daniels does in his first postseason moment. And the Bucks are like scrappy. So I think those two will be the most exciting for me, besides my Bills fandom.
I'm having a weird, like, personal experience with the Commanders because I've heard and read and seen, I guess, on highlights all this great Jaden Daniels stuff. But whenever I actually, like, sat down and watched the Commanders, he wasn't playing well. And he was hurt kind of in the middle of the season. There was talk about, you know, maybe Bo Nix is the best quarterback and all that stuff, and that quickly died down. But I haven't seen the Jaden Daniels experience in full, and that's why I'm looking forward to a Commanders Island game this weekend. Of course, we'll see if the rookie quarterback can do what most rookie quarterbacks don't do, which is have success in their first postseason start. I'm with you with Packers and Eagles because I do think, despite the line not being particularly close, the Eagles are 5.5-point favorites on Betano. If I was doing like, okay, I got my top three and I mentioned this, I think the Ravens, Chiefs and Lions, the Super Bowl winner will be within that group. If everybody was healthy, we're just assuming health, I think in my next tier, it would be both Philly and the Packers and maybe just Philly and the Packers. I probably would have to include the Bills just because they're on that level. But I do believe, despite them being a seventh seed, that the Packers are a really good team and that they could be, they have upset potential. They could beat any team. They could lose to pretty much any team. Probably in the playoffs. So I'm hoping that we get a good effort from the Packers because I think I had some expectation coming into, I guess, the stretch run of the season and had some leading into the playoffs, but the Jordan Love injury thing has cooled that a little bit for me.
All right, let's ask our first guest of the evening, Donovan Bennett, Going Deep and the Fan Checkdown. Donovan, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
I'm great. I'm currently hiding from my children. My wife is out. Every mom needs at least one night a week where she goes out. She's not part of bedroom routine. And so it's just me. We're playing zone. And it's just it's a one-man zone on two. So I'm throwing them off, though. I'm hiding in their room because they're going to look for me in my room. So if you see a toddler walk in and blitz me under pressure, that's what's happening. So for our viewers, I'm not being held hostage. I don't need to blink twice. I'm okay. I'm just hiding from my children because these are the only two people I would do this for, to be honest.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We'll keep it quick and brief, and we'll keep it quiet so then you don't get caught by the kids.
No, thank you. Parenting sucks. Like, you're just on a penalty kill until bedtime, so you guys are helping me out.
Okay, we appreciate that. The sentiment is the same. So we're talking about wildcard weekend. First of all, we thought it was super wildcard weekend. What happened to the super, you know?
Did we drop the super?
I think we dropped the super. Unless I got misled, I think we dropped the super.
Adam Schefter alert? I thought it was super because it's stretched over 3 days. It's more games. Although I'm fond of the divisional round. I think that's when the pretenders and the contenders get separated. But I did not know we dropped the super. This is why you watch and listen to Fan Pregame, for this type of insight and analysis.
Well, we hope it's true.
Very niche stuff.
We hope it's true. So let's just go generally. What's the game of the weekend for you when you look at these? We were just kind of rattling off some of our favorites, but the one that you definitely will be sitting on the couch for to consume.
Ooh, I should have asked for the questions beforehand. That is tough. That is like asking me to choose between my children. Let's go AFC North. Okay. An extra bonus episode of Hard Knocks, because there will be real consequences to the outcome of this game. Only one winner, clearly. It is tough to face a team for the third time. The tendencies are out there. Lamar Jackson is great against everybody except the Pittsburgh Steelers. His numbers in all categories and wins and losses are the worst against Pittsburgh. But who is coming into the postseason with less juice, less aura, less riz, as the kids would say, than the Pittsburgh Steelers? So there's going to be real questions on both quarterbacks. If Lamar has potentially his third MVP and doesn't make it to divisional round, not a great look. If Russell Wilson finishes the year 0-5, not a great look. He might not be coming back in Pittsburgh as a head coach. And when you talk to people in and around that team, as much as we love Mike Tomlin, we love the quotes, we love the Omar Epps memes, they don't love the fact that they haven't won in the postseason for 5 years. So I'm fascinated in terms of the intrigue, because both teams just over a month ago were like, we're not only fighting for the AFC North, we're fighting for the one seed. Mm-hmm. Now neither of them have the one seed, and one of them is going to be gone after one game.
Yeah, it feels particularly perilous for the Baltimore Ravens for me, because like there's a lot of expectations on this season. And I guess if they're the second seed and it's Denver, you'd feel so much better about it because, well, they did handle Denver earlier, but it's Tomlin, and Tomlin always has something for them, and they definitely should be moving on past this round, but we'll see if they can, in fact, accomplish that. Let's go to tomorrow's, curtain jerker, being the Chargers and the Texans. Jim Harbaugh returning to the site where he won the national championship last year at NRG Stadium, and he, in many ways, is the story for the Chargers because he has changed the way that they function, bringing them to this position. But winning a playoff game on the road requires something that it's pretty high bar. Harbaugh done enough in a year in your mind to get past that high bar?
I think so. Unless the Chargers just really charger again and blow another massive lead in the postseason, I think they're playing with house money. They've been relatively injured. They're getting a bit healthier. Dobbins will be a real factor, no question. But like, just book it. Harbaugh, 11 wins, postseason bid. They played the Chiefs tough. I think if you're a Chargers fan, you're one happy that you got him in the coaching cycle a year ago, and he didn't wait for the sanctions to come down in Michigan and was in this coaching cycle. I think the real questions when it comes to the Chargers is less Harbaugh and more Herbert, their quarterback, who everyone is down on C.J. Stroud and that quarterback and that team going into the playoffs. C.J. Stroud's already won a playoff game in his young career, in the second year of his career. Herbert has not yet won a playoff game. So as much as he is the darling of analytics and Twitter's favorite quarterback, I think we start to groan and roll our eyes about him being a part of that elite conversation in the same way people are starting to for a Lamar Jackson, potentially for, if they don't make a deep run, a Josh Allen. So I when I think of the Chargers, I think this being important for Herbert and him being put in that conversation with the true elites in the game.
Okay, I'm glad you mentioned Josh Allen because I want to go there next. Broncos at Bills.
Talk to me.
I'm a Bills fan, so I'm going to think about, yes, that the only way that the Broncos could beat the Bills, I'm trying to plan that out, would be, I think, just getting at the quarterback, which is their best asset, leading the league in sacks this year, but it's Josh Allen who has been better at that this year. So what is the game plan for the Broncos going in if they're going to try to upset the Bills on Sunday?
I think you said it. This is strength on strength. The great pass rush and Vance Joseph, who wants to blitz the quarterback coming off the bus. This is how he lives and what he does. And then no one, in terms of a team and a player, has been better under pressure than Josh Allen. You could blitz him, but you're wasting your time. QBR 85, number one in the league. Pass rush and TDs combined, 13, one in the league. Yards per drop back, 6.5, one in the league. It's at the point, and Allen's got to the point where it's almost as if he wants you to blitz. Like, you're making my answers easy for me, so you might as well do it. And even if you get home, I'm bigger than most of your defensive ends and the outside linebackers, so it's still a task to bring me down. So that's the aspect that I'm fascinated in. And does Denver get home and start to make Buffalo play behind the sticks off schedule and put them in some second and third long? Or is Allen as good when pressured as he's been throughout the regular season? That's the formula. It has to be for Denver to have this upset, because I don't think, if everything is clean and blocked up, you think Bo Nix in his first playoff game is going to go shot for shot, play for play with Josh Allen.
No. We're talking to Donovan Bennett, host of Going Deep and The Fan. Check down on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What are my general rules of thumb when looking at these games? That, okay, who's the quarterback? Who's the coach? And if I look at Eagles and Packers, I look at the coaches and I see Sirianni versus LaFleur, and I like LaFleur. And then I look at the quarterbacks, and maybe it's not as big of a discrepancy, but I probably would pick, all things, you know, everything else aside, Jordan Love over Jalen Hurts. But just looking at those two measures probably doesn't tell the whole story between Packers and Eagles, would it?
I don't think it would. I mean, I think the real story for me in terms of the two and these quarterbacks is, how healthy are they? Jalen Hurts was in concussion protocol for more than a week, which has been the default, it seems, for NFL players this year. He is ready. He practiced midweek, has already been cleared to play. But it wasn't that long ago when A.J. Brown was asked what is wrong with the Eagles' offense. His answer was passing, and that was it. And so the fact that his passer hasn't been playing with that team for the last couple weeks, hasn't had a full week of practice, and going against a defense that isn't great, but the strength of that defense is their secondary. How healthy is Hurts? How good are they at passing? And more importantly, the weakness of the Packers is their run defense. Are you willing and able to put Jalen Hurts into that run plan, knowing that he was recently concussed? I think if he's cleared to play, he should be cleared to play, and everything on the play sheet should be available to you, but that's not human nature, so I'm interested there. And it's not a good thing when a week before a playoff game, your QB says he hurt his elbow, he's lost feeling in his throwing hand. That's the scenario for Jordan Love. So he's lost his deep threat in Christian Watson. So I want to know, among these two quarterbacks, who's actually healthy? Who's going to make it to the 12th round, to the end of the fourth quarter? Because when both have been hot, and we've seen it in the past, they can get on a multi-game run that can propel a team to a conference championship or potentially a Super Bowl. But they got to be healthy to be able to do it. Availability is your best ability at this time of year.
Heading down to Sunday night, Commander's Bucs. No sign of any toddlers yet, so we're doing well. A rematch of week one, both teams have really changed a lot this season. I guess my question is, like, are you believing in the first Jaden Daniels postseason moment, that stardom that we've seen this season? Like, can he continue to deliver that against a pretty scrappy Bucs team?
So funny you mentioned that, because I went back and I watched some of that matchup in week one, and everything is different.
Yeah.
Players on the field for both teams, it's different. The temperature literally was different. And the most stark difference for me was Jaden Daniels in his first start against a coach in Lovie Smith, who has feasted against rookies and loved to blitz them. Although Daniels, another QB who's really not fazed by the blitz at all, but he's really grown throughout the year. And he is like that toddler, and you guys have been around it, who's just learning to walk. And it's like, hey, are you good? You okay? I know you don't want my help, but you look like you're a little drunk. And he started that way, and now he's the toddler who's balancing on top of the couch with one hand. I think in this matchup, we could see him go off in a similar fashion to the way we saw C.J. Stroud go off in the first playoff game a year ago. I love Daniels in this spot, quite frankly, because Lovie Smith is blitzing a lot this year because, little secret, his defense sucks. And so I expect a lot of points in this game, which fits Cliff Kingsbury and fits Jaden Daniels just fine. The Commanders may have some issues. I don't think their quarterback's going to be one.
You'll be able to tee up the last game on Super Wild Card Weekend on Monday, because it's being played Monday night in Arizona.
Super back?
We're keeping Super. We like it enough to keep it around.
I like it.
Monday night, you'll be able to tee it up on Monday on the Fan Checkdown. Vikings and Rams from Arizona because of the wildfires in Los Angeles. You know, Vikings have an opportunity for the number one seed, the first 14-win team matchup in history to close out the regular season, and they come up short. And I wonder, from a schematic standpoint, how costly you think that was, because the book wasn't out on Darnold, on the Vikings, on Kevin O'Connell, until the Lions defense got after them and made life miserable for maybe the comeback player of the year in Sam Darnold. Do you think it's going to be easy for McVay to look at what happened in the last game of the regular season and scheme things up in a way that's going to make things almost as difficult on Sam Darnold and the Minnesota Vikings?
So to answer those questions in order, was it costly? Yes. Will it be easy? Yes. I do think. I think it was a massive loss. All wins and all losses aren't created equal. And just emotionally, let's take us inside that Minnesota Vikings locker room. You go from a bye and home field throughout to losing, go back from Detroit back to Minnesota on the road, pack your bags for LA. Wait, no, pack your bags for Arizona. You're going to go on the road, if you win, a couple more times to then get to the Super Bowl, which is by default a road game. Oh, and by the way, the team that you're about to play, they didn't actually care about the seed. They punted a game to fall down in the standings to play you, and their head coach is the guy who trained your head coach. So he knows all the secrets. He knows where all the bodies are buried. He knows how to set up his defense for your offense. I think it is a tough game, which is why I think the line is so close, even though Minnesota has been by far and away the better team throughout the regular season. It's a real tough ask for Minnesota. It's going to be an exciting game because I think we have playmakers. But you talk about costly. Let's talk about Sam Darnold. He went from, man, you could have your pick your litter, you could be a priority free agent this offseason, to, do the Minnesota Vikings even want you back? Will you have to back up J.J. McCarthy, who's hasn't really done anything of consequence in the NFL? So people were waiting to be like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's the Sam Darnold who was seeing ghosts on Monday Night Football. They had to wait until January to be able to say it. If he has two back-to-back bad games in a row, they're going to say it all offseason.
Okay, Donovan, we have a hard out. You have 60 seconds to answer this, okay? Make your case for the MVP this season.
Oh, man.
60 seconds. Oh. See how good of a radio host you could be.
My case for the MVP in 60 seconds is we changed the stats for Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. Passer rating wasn't good enough to evaluate him because he was so good at as a rusher. Well, he just put up historically one of the best passer rating seasons of all time. Of his picks, only one of them was actually his fault. And he's won the MVP twice. This year was better. I love law. He set a precedent. Possession is 9/10 of the law. He owns the MVP. He's been better than his previous MVPs. I'm sorry, Bills fans. Lamar Jackson is the MVP.
Okay, well, we're going to hang up now. It's okay. You know what? I think I understand. As a Bills fan, I get it. I'm just been a bit blinded by love for Josh Allen.
And what everyone else has been saying, because I think everyone's been telling us Allen's been the MVP. But today we got the all-pros, and Lamar Jackson was the all-pro quarterback, which usually equates to an MVP.
I'll take a Super Bowl over an MVP. How about that?
I actually think it's better if he doesn't win the MVP, goes in motivated. Track the last MVP winners outside of Mahomes. Most of them don't finish it off with the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They finish it off in the front row in a suit at the NFL Honors, hosted by Snoop this year. So it should be fun. But I actually think you don't want him to win it. You want him to be upset.
Right. You're so right. Donovan, we appreciate your time tonight. Happy Friday night. Go show the kids where you've been hiding. You were the winner.
Go pick up a blitz.
And you got it. Thanks so much.
I'm actually just going to hang out here for a little bit.
Keep watching us. Thanks, Donovan. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
This is Donovan Bennett going deep in the Fan Checkdown, and I think he's on to something. I'm good. We don't need the MVP. We need the Super Bowl. I want my quarterback to have like a chip on his shoulder.
You know what? I just want, I need the Ravens to win. We need the Bills to win. They're both like 8.5, 9-point favorites. We need that matchup. Mm. Ravens, Bills.
Oh, that'd be great.
Divisional round. Two guys who think the other guy is winning the MVP and are motivated for that reason. Let them decide it then. Can we just put the MVP on the line in that game? I think that makes more sense than anything else.
We're coming up with lots of great ideas tonight on the Fan pregame. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk Brad Marchand, and then we'll talk Jeff Blair. That's all next.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan pregame, final 30 minutes before the weekend. Still lots to go through. We're going to talk to Jeff Blair in about 5 minutes about some of the Blue Jays-related news. Also hearing from John Morosi that free agent Jeff Hoffman and the Blue Jays have had productive dialogue in recent days about a potential multi-year deal. So we'll get to the bottom of it. But before that, we teased this at the beginning of the show. Brad Marchand, spicy, just... though not holding back his feelings towards two hosts, Rich Keefe and co-host of Jones and Keefe on New England Radio, was reporting earlier today that Pasternak is at the center of this big rift in the locker room. Quote, the locker room is a disaster, and David Pasternak is at the center of that. David Pasternak has told the team he doesn't want to be in a line with Brad Marchand, and it may stem from Brad Marchand calling out Pasternak for some of his play. So this went pretty viral online.
Yeah, big news.
And then... Brad Marchand obviously saw it and was asked straight up about it at the first media availability today with the Boston Bruins. And the Boston Bruins were the one that tweeted out about 4 to 5 minute response where Marchand just goes in on the host. So we've clipped a small portion of it for your viewing pleasure. Here you go.
It's unfortunate. I know reporters have a job to do. And, that job is to report on the team, and usually you try to be fact-based. But when there's just blatant lies told in the media, that's where there's a problem. And the fact that this guy has a platform and he's just making stuff up is embarrassing. And there's zero truth to anything that he said on the radio. This is how you lose your job very quickly. The fact that he's going to have a job after this is insane, because Pass and I are best friends.
All right. Thoughts? First of all, I would be so scared. I know this is this guy's job, and he also...
Oh, you'd be scared if you were the radio host?
Well, because, if Brad Marchand was, berating me on social media in front of the world, I'd probably hate it.
Be a little uncomfortable.
But then this reporter tweeted this and said, oh, looks like I proved my point. Why would you be so defensive? Clearly, I'm right. So... I mean, you got to have your sources right.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things here. I mean, it kind of for me, underscores the Pedersen-Miller thing. There is a way to diffuse a situation, and I think Brad Marchand definitely went into that. And I am asking the question, though, to myself, why go that hard? And I think
Marchand.
In staunch defense of him and everything that's going on, I think one of the reasons it's Brad Marchand, and he knows actually how to handle this situation. Mm-hmm. He is a captain who knows how to handle the media, knows how to speak for himself. There are a few guys like Marchand in the league. So that's one reason. It's just Brad Marchand, and he therefore is different. Two would be that it's total BS as he's outlying, and that it's so ridiculous that you can't not say anything because you can't let it linger when it is complete fabrication, or there's a kernel of truth here.
Oh, you're believing it.
Kernel of truth here, and therefore you have to go hard in that direction because otherwise you're going to let it become something. So I don't know how old Keefe got the news here, got the information from inside the locker room. Maybe there's something there, but maybe it's actually not even close to as important as he was trying to make it out to be. I think Brad Marchand did the captainly thing here and definitely nipped it in the bud, and it's pretty impressive what he was able to accomplish in that. But I do worry a little bit more about the Bruins, who continue to lose hockey games and look like they are completely lost, with their culture being tested significantly this year.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is a different Bruins than we've seen in the past. And Brad Marchand now being the captain, I think he's probably feeling a little bit of that heat as well, right? Being the center of this debate, I guess, if there is chemistry, if there is a problem between the two best or the most productive guys on this team in a long time. So to come out and just be blatantly honest about it, I guess is one way of doing it.
And it hasn't been a Pasternak season like we've come to expect way more. The same with Brad Marchand. There's a lot of uncertainty moving forward with this Bruins team, and it may just be coming to a head, but the guy who actually brought this to the fore may have been slightly misled.
I do think we want more personality from hockey players, and we get some right there. So I'm happy about it. Okay. Happy to see Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker who joins us now. Jeff, happy holidays. Good to see you. What's new?
Good to see you guys. You know, same old, just sitting around waiting for news.
We miss seeing you around here, so I'm glad you figured out FaceTime.
It's pretty good. This is actually a technological Rubicon I've crossed here with FaceTime.
This is a big advancement
I think
for
I'll
you.
I'll probably be back in the office, probably getting back in next week now that I'm off vacation mode.
So. Okay, so things are happening. We'll start.
Well, maybe.
Well, we'll start with the Vlad of it all, because I know if you fired up your old Twitter account after the vacation. And, of course, Vlad does get avoid arbitration yesterday. But I wonder the path to the long-term deal, which you say is still obviously possible, and we believe so as well. But is it a rocky road? Is it a road that's just simply kind of swallowing your pride and coming to the table with what Vlad wants? Like, how do you view this passageway for Vlad and the Blue Jays?
Well, I mean, the Blue Jays at this point have absolutely no leverage. You know, they might have had a little bit of leverage a couple of years ago, but at this point, I don't see why on earth Vlad would sign with this team unless the Blue Jays offer him something in the neighborhood of $450 million to $500 million. Other than that, I don't know why he'd sign here.
Do any other variables matter in all of this? I mean, there's variables on each side. I mean, there's a loyalty thing with Vlad, and he's only known Toronto. There's the bad roster that seems to be, is this just down to cold hard cash? And if Vladdy will take it if the cash is available to him, even this close to free agency?
I mean, at this point, you're going to have to probably pay more to get him than you would have had to pay, let's say, 3 years ago or 2 years ago. He's not giving you a discount. No, nor should he. I mean, the thing that's really frustrating about this is, you know, if this was a team that didn't have an ownership group committed to spending a ton of money to put it together, right? If it wasn't a team, and this is the thing that really frustrates me, it's not as if they have had a quote-unquote issue with Vladdy when it comes to his contract. They've gone to a hearing once. Mm-hmm. In other words, what that means is the two sides have agreed on his value every other year. I mean, Bo Bichette forced the Blue Jays to renew him before he was arbitration eligible, which is a sign that the player doesn't agree with what the team is offering. That didn't happen with Vladdy. So the thing that's so frustrating, I think, for Blue Jays fans, and you know, it's frustrating for me as someone who's watched baseball for a long time, is look, last year was the first year that you didn't agree on how much value the player had. And you were only, you know, it was such a minuscule difference. So if this was a situation where ownership wasn't spending money, if this was a situation where the team and the player had to fight tooth and nail every year for money, then you could kind of see why the team would be in this position. And there's no reason for it. You know, Rafael Devers' contract, Shida Vitti's article today is great. Mm-hmm. Rafael Devers' contract has been out there for a couple of years. That's the template. You knew that Juan Soto was going to be a free agent this year. Juan Soto in 2022 turned down $425 million over 10 years from the Washington Nationals. So you know what Juan Soto is likely going to be asking for when he's a free agent. This is, you know, the idea that, oh my God, Juan Soto came along and he got so much money that it completely threw everything out of kilter. No, it didn't. If you had told someone last year that there was a chance after Shohei Ohtani signed that contract that Juan Soto would at least be seeking something in the neighborhood of $700 to $750 million, everybody would have said, yeah. I mean, it's not like that came out of the blue. So, you know, to me, this is a very simple situation. Either the Blue Jays management wants Vladdy back or they don't want him back. And they think they can use that money to better the team in some other way. And, you know, I just say, look at their track record. What would make you think that this front office would be able to replace Vladimir Guerrero Jr. next offseason? I mean, they haven't signed anybody so far this year of significance. So I covered this team when they were going through the whole thing with Carlos Delgado, and they ended up letting Delgado go as a free agent without compensation. And at the time I thought, it was such a stupid situation for the team to put itself in, but I kind of understood it in retrospect. I just don't see this other than this being an indication that this management group thinks they can be a better team without him. And there's no reason for this deal not to be done. This is arguably one of the, would have been, if the Jays had addressed this a couple of years ago, seriously, one of the easiest long-term contracts to negotiate.
Guys in the same performance tier of Vlad, like, pretty much treated completely different. Like, is he sort of isolated in the way that he's viewed by his own organization compared to pretty much anyone else who would be sort of in his percentile? Or is that too much of a generalization?
Yeah. It's really hard because I'm not certain that this front office views players the same way other front offices view players. You know, this front office has a very serious, a very clear-cut philosophical bent. I mean, we know that. They trust their numbers. They trust their numbers that are saying they can make players better, their own players better. They trust the numbers that say they can bring somebody outside the organization and make that player better. I mean, they absolutely trust their numbers. And they're absolutely convinced that they are the smartest guys in the room. And they are going to live and die according to this philosophical / analytical template they have. I think back to something somebody told me a couple of years ago when we were talking. We talked a lot about how much money the Jays were investing in infrastructure and, you know, this spring training facility and how much money they were throwing into analytics and all this stuff. And I had somebody in the organization say to me, look, when you put all that money into that type of a thing, you don't turn around all of a sudden and go, yeah, I know our analytics guys are telling us that so-and-so isn't worth this. We think he is. We're just out of the goodness of our hearts, or our gut tells us that this guy is worth this much money. So forget about what our analytics guys are telling us. We're going to go with this. Like, you don't spend all that money and all that stuff and then at a crucial juncture say, I'm just not paying attention to that. So I'm frankly not surprised where we are right now. I kind of thought this thing was heading in this direction for the last 3 years, maybe even 4 years.
We're chatting with Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker, coming back to the office soon, just for the office.
We got the engine running now.
Oh, we got it. Okay, so let's talk about what could be next on the horizon, because there's still some pieces like Santander, Bregman, a starting pitcher. Is that like enough to salvage this offseason, or salvaging, which a lot of Blue Jays fans are kind of using the word, like start with a Vlad extension?
Right. Look, I mean, I think you have to separate two things. Can the Blue Jays, are they still in a position to be a better team this year than last year? Absolutely. I know you mentioned Santander. There's some free agent relievers out there. There's still a couple of free agent starters out there. Look, I've said that if you don't think you're going to sign both Vlo and Bo and Vladdy, at some point maybe you ought to think of trading Bo and getting something in return that's going to help you for the next couple of years, because you've already got your shortstop and Andrés Giménez. So, yes, as we sit here, could the Blue Jays be a better team when they go into spring training than they are right now? Absolutely. But will that, without the accompaniment of a Vladimir Guerrero contract extension, I mean, we can't even call it an extension now. It's going to have to be a long-term contract. It's going to have to be an 8, 9, or 10-year contract. Even if the team is better going into spring training, will that be enough to satisfy people if Vladdy isn't signed? I don't know. I understand. I know one of the things Mark Shapiro believes is that, look, winning teams are what bring people into the stadium. It's great if your winning team has a marquee player, but I mean, if you don't have a marquee player and your team still wins, people are going to come in. And I kind of buy that. I think Toronto fans want to love the team. It's great if that team has a tremendous player, but Toronto fans want to love the team. And I understand that. But my whole counter argument to that is, you got to tell me that either you know how to make this team better without Vladdy next year, or, you know, like there's got to be, there's two parts to that equation. I'll buy that it's not in your, it's not part of your philosophy to go out there and give a guy 10 years and $475 million, whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. That may be your philosophy, but you damn sure better be able to convince me that your philosophy includes a way of making the team better without that guy. Like, if you can convince me that the Blue Jays can be better next year without Vladdy, that this front office has the capability of doing what it needs to do either in the draft or in the trade market or in free agency and somehow make itself better next year without Vladdy, you know, then I'll listen. But I, you know, I'm going to have to mark myself down as being hugely skeptical about this front office's ability to do that right now, because what have we seen in the past couple of years from these guys? Who have they made better? Yeah. Which player have they brought in here and made him better? You know, we've waited, what, how many years for Dalton Varsho? Like I said, if you're going to move off Vladdy, you better be damn certain that you can convince me that you got a better idea. And so far, I don't see these guys having a better idea.
Does the Vlad issue sort of explain the free agent issue? Like, it's all about valuations, and they look at Vladdy this way, and that's not what Vladdy looks like, and they look at these free agents this way, and the free agents, as Shai wrote in his piece, like, it's all about making irrational decisions. They're trying to remain rational, but this is an irrational time. Like, if they just play this valuation game with their own guys and with free agents, does it explain all the silver medals and why they might lose Vladdy for, well, maybe nothing?
I mean, I think it has to. I don't know what the other explanation is for it. I mean, it has to be the reason that things have, you know, developed in the way they've developed with this organization. I can't see anything else that would explain it. You know, I think we need to remember. I think we may have gotten, I'm talking about those of us in the Toronto media and maybe to a certain degree Blue Jays fans. I think we kind of got a little carried away when the Blue Jays signed George Springer to that free agent contract. I think maybe, you know, we needed, it was the moment where maybe we forgot that it's always going to cost more to bring a free agent to Toronto than any place else. They're the outliers. I believe Kevin Gausman actually turned down more money to come to Toronto. So there are outliers. But I keep going back to Russ Martin, Captain Canada. Russ Martin signed here because the Blue Jays gave him an extra year and more money. So I think maybe the past couple of years have been a little bit of a reality check for not just us, maybe for the Blue Jays front office. I mean, J.P. Ricciardi used to talk about a Canadian premium, that if he was going after a player who had a three-year contract offer from Team X, J.P. Ricciardi automatically knew he'd have to give that player a four-year guarantee to even get his attention. In other words, it was, for whatever the reason, it was going to cost more to bring that player in to Toronto compared to any other market. And I still think that holds. And when you look around at the free agents who've signed and you dig into, you read the reporting on sort of how these free agents came to their conclusions, right? Yeah, it's all about money. It's always about money. But a lot of them and a lot of their agents do a lot of due diligence on the organization, right? You've heard about Juan Soto talking about the minor league system. You've heard about other players talking about the minor league system when they've signed with the team. I'll commit to you, but what's your minor league system like? What's next year going to look like? What are 2 years going to look like? And if you're a free agent and you're looking at the Blue Jays, you see a team that hasn't got its marquee player signed to a multi-year contract, frankly, doesn't seem to have come close to it. Again, maybe that can all change, but as of right now we're talking, it's a team that hasn't signed its marquee free agent. It's a team that's in a ballpark now that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to give up the same, doesn't seem to have the same offensive profile it had the year before. Great if you're a pitcher, maybe not so much if you're a hitter like Alec Bregman. Oh, and by the way, if you really want to do a deep dive into what the future looks like, the minor league system's not very good. I understand that minor league rankings are kind of, they can be fickle, but you go through almost every, Baseball America, Keith Law, whoever, you go through any rating of the minor league systems in baseball, and the Jays are, I think, at best 24th. So, that's something else that I think also enters into this equation. Like, you have to convince players that if they sign with you, yeah, they're going to make their money. That's great. They're going to make their money. They're going to be treated well. You know that. They're going to travel well. Hotels are going to be great. City's great. The teams, the families are taken care of, all that. But you've got to convince them that you've got a plan in place and that they're not signing up for 4 or 5 years knowing that 3 of those years, they're going to be in the wilderness playing for a last place team.
I think that's extremely fair. We're up against the clock, Jeff. It would be nice to have more Jeff Blair in our lives coming soon. So come back whenever you're ready and we can chat. But we appreciate your time on a Friday night and good to see you.
Absolutely. Take care. Good to see you guys too.
Thanks so much. Jeff Blair of Blair and Barker. And we are closing in on start of the season. So they'll be back a little bit.
I love that he brought up Gausman, because Gausman apparently did take less, as he mentioned, to come to the Blue Jays. Why? Because he thought he was coming here to play with Vlad and Bo and win baseball games, like a lot of them, important baseball games. And if you're trying to get a free agent now, there's absolutely no promise of winning. And therefore, if there's a tiebreaker, Blue Jays are losing that every single time.
Yes. Okay. We've got about 2 minutes to go through some best bets.
Let's do it. Let's fire through these games.
Okay, so we're going to just quickly go through the games off the cuff here this weekend and pick a side.
Okay, do you want to lead the dance?
You go first.
Okay. So Chargers 2.5, it's juiced at the Texans, meaning you got to pay a little bit more to get the Chargers at 3. I just would bet the Texans, but I'd probably bet the Texans money line. I will take the 2.5 points, I guess, because that's what we're doing here with a little head-to-head. But I think the Texans are going to be very, very competitive in this game. Maybe they lose by a field goal, and that's a little bit unfortunate for me. But I do think the Texans are live, so I'll take the Texans plus the points.
I will take the Steelers plus 8.5 over the Ravens. That's probably one of my favorites.
Really?
Yep.
No explanation?
We have about 1 minute, so I think we have to just go through the bets. But
I'm taking the Bills, rookie quarterback. Bills are ready to go. That place is going to be popping. Bills, 8.5.
I'm going to take the Packers to cover 5.5 against the Eagles.
Okay.
I'm a cover machine this weekend.
I like the Commanders, 3.5, the Bucks, in terms of the spread. Yeah, you're going to give me the field goal. I'll take the Commanders, lose by 3, and that's a cash.
And then I'll take Vikings, 2.5.
Okay.
Okay. I think I probably would have agreed with all of yours, but I scarily kind of like the Broncos to cover.
Really? Good defense. We can flip those. Like, I like the Ravens, you like... Well, I guess it makes sense. We got the sides that we
Quickly, both like. My best bet of the night, Bunker's dog of the day, Canucks plus 142. What is going on? They're playing the Canes and Dustin Tokarski in that, our producer's favorite goaltender, on a back-to-back. Demko back in, Pedersen back in. I like the Canucks. They were rested.
Cotton Bowl tonight, shout out Bunker. Ohio State's winning this game. They're going to win it in big-time fashion. So I'm laying the 6 points with Ohio State. Lamar Jackson's going to win Super Bowl MVP plus 800 before we get started this weekend.
Okay. That was fun. That was a very busy show, and we got through it all. I'm looking forward to our head-to-head picks. and all the games on the network tonight, and big day on Hockey Night in Canada tomorrow. That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great weekend, everyone, and super wildcard weekend. Bring the super back.